We're going to give each candidate an opportunity to introduce themselves, and thank you both for participating. You each have 2 minutes for an opening statement. Nan, let's start with you.
Great. Thank you so much. And thanks to KPCW, the Park Record, the Chamber, as well as the Park City Community Foundation for making this possible today. And thanks to everyone that took the time to come today, as well as those that are listening. For those of you that don't know me, I started my career as a United States Navy nurse, and I've lived a life of service since then. I learned from the wounded warriors that I cared for that leadership is about service and honor. Honoring those you serve, honoring the community you serve, and honoring the commitments that you make. My career has included time spent as a hospital administrator, as well as being the co-founder of a medical clinic in Alabama serving the uninsured. When my husband and I moved our empty nest to Park City in 2008, I plunged into this community. I was so excited to be here. I had the opportunity and privilege to serve as the executive director of the People's Health Clinic for 8 years, and there I honed my collaboration skills, knowing that they're built on mutual trust and respect. I served 5.5 years on the Park City Planning Commission, 2 of those as chair, and gained a deep understanding of the land management code as well as the general plan. I'm currently serving my 2nd term on the Park City Council, and I'm a real geek about the public process. I admit that. I'm running for mayor because I believe a different tone and leadership style is needed at City Hall. It's past time to welcome all voices at the table and capitalize on the incredible human capital that we have here in this town. Finally, I'm running to restore the broken relationship between the Summit County Council and the mayor's office. We have so much to do jointly, and we simply don't have time for discord. We have pressing issues that need to be addressed, and mutual respect and trust between the two councils is needed now more than ever. I have the skills and the relationships to bring about the change that is needed. Thank you.
Thank you, and Mayor Bierman.
Okay, well, good afternoon and happy Indigenous Peoples Day. It was nice to see our president make that acknowledgement on a federal level. Also, a big thank you to the Chamber, the Community Foundation, KPCW, and the Park Record. So it is nice to be back, and it's even nicer to have an audience. It was only 8 months ago I was in here giving the State of the City to an empty room. And I got to say, it was a strange time and a pretty frustrating time to try to communicate with the public. When I was elected mayor 4 years ago, I had no idea that I'd be dealing with a crisis like none we've seen before. The last time the community saw anything like that was the Great Fire of 1898. What I am proud of is how the community's recovered. It's been downright amazing, and just like the Great Fire, the recovery's exceeded everybody's expectations. In particular, the economic recovery has been tremendous. I would argue it might be too fast. It's left our residents feeling disoriented and displaced, even in their own town. And we're scrambling to adjust what it feels like with all these new people here. It's kind of ironic considering just 2 years ago at the Vision 2020, there was real fear that we would become Disneyland Park City, that no one could afford to live here. And although I understand the concern of the immigration and all the new people here, I'm grateful to have new neighbors again. So following the pandemic, residents have been asking me, what's changed? And I can't really answer that yet, but what I can tell you what hasn't changed, which are our top concerns. Going door to door, I've been doing a lot of listening and hearing anxiety over growth, traffic, community, and climate. I'm running for a 2nd term because I'd like to carry forward the Vision 2020 and continue to tackle these issues. It begins by restoring balance. We need to put locals first and value community over economy. The problems ahead are complex, they're regional, and they're daunting. But I have deep regional relationships and a record of taking on bold challenges and succeeding. As your mayor, I'm all in to think big, act local, and tackle these challenges together. Thank you.
Thank you. Our first question comes from the Park City Chamber Bureau. These next 2 questions were given to the candidates in advance, and they'll have 3 minutes to answer them. The question is, City Council conversations this year have overwhelmingly shared a residents-first philosophy. Something, by the way, that the Park City Chamber of Commerce completely supports. At the same time, we have a local economy whose success is dependent upon a healthy level of tourism revenue, including 14,000 tourism-related jobs. While always putting residents first, what are some of the specific policies or projects you advocate to benefit Park City's business community and local economy. This may include win-win examples where healthy local revenues provide for quality of life, residential services, and amenities. Mayor Bierman, let's have you answer first.
Okay, well, tourism clearly fuels our economy and supports our amenities, with about 85% of our revenues in this town coming from commercial business or tourism. And I like to characterize it for us locals, it's kind of like having a rich uncle. Our trails and open space and rec facilities and many of the amenities we enjoy, our transit as well, are all paid for largely through these taxes. But I think the goal over the years has been to strive for a balance, to balance out our locals and our tourists, and I feel like we are out of balance at this point, that our economy is overrunning our community. And that's why we're having the conversations right now about sustainable tourism, and I think those are exciting. The question is, what does that mean? And that's something we're exploring. But in my book, it really means investing in our neighborhoods and investing in our locals, taking that money we get from tourism and making safe neighborhoods, controlling speeds and cut-through traffic, improving walkability and connections, hiring more police to manage those neighborhoods where we're having them be overrun by tourism and needing to control that better, and also doing a better job of mitigating construction traffic. I think another area we could make some progress on is reducing events. Again and again, we hear from our locals that we need to cut back on events, the challenge being everybody's got their favorites, so it's hard when we get down to specifics. But the reality is we once needed events as an economic driver, and I think our reliance on that has decreased. And I would propose that we make about a 25% decrease in events going forward. Which ones is going to have to be a community conversation, but my goal would be to have, during the summer, weekends with no events, and during the off-season, weeks with no events, so our locals can come out and reclaim the town. And then the last part, I just want to talk about opportunity. I think we've seen a whole new crop of people move here, and I see a slow shift from a tourism economy to a lifestyle economy. And that means that quality of life is going to be the most important thing to keep these people here. And a lot of our new residents, they are people of means, and they are spending either significant time or full time here, and they spend more like the tourists. And that's resulted in some really strong, incredibly strong economic months during our off season. And I think if what that brings to us is some stability, and it allows us to be a little more choosy. So I think we can start looking at how we approach tourism as more of a quality over quantity equation and explore how we can do, what new opportunities are opened up by having that more stable economy.
Thank you, and Nan.
Well, I need to be really clear up front that I have never owned a business in Park City, but I do spend a lot of time patronizing them. And I spend time every day talking with people that are in the trenches working in those businesses. The number one issue that I keep hearing from our businesses right now is the labor shortage. Well, that's certainly not unique to Park City, but I think we feel it especially hard here because our workforce, because our businesses and our resort economy are so dependent on them. When I was at the People's Health Clinic, we talked a lot about being the safety net. We recognize that many of the small businesses in Park City can't afford to provide insurance for their employees, yet they can't operate without a healthy workforce. So that's where the People's Health Clinic came in, and I think that was never more apparent than during the pandemic. My focus during my time on the City Council has been on expanding that safety net. I recognize that people need affordable, quality daycare in order to work, so I was instrumental in obtaining the initial funding for PC Tots 2. But that's just the tip of the iceberg, PC Tots 2, because a recent study has shown that there's a 66% gap between the number of children needing daycare and the number of spots available. The parents can't work, our businesses can't thrive unless we have that safety net, that child care in place so that the parents can go to work. I also think that the safety net needs to be expanded to include affordable transportation options for our workforce. I've been hearing that some Main Street employee businesses are sending Uber to pick up their employees that live in Salt Lake City because that's the only way they can get them up here to work on the weekends and holidays. We've got to figure out a way jointly to make it easy and affordable for employees that live in other communities to get to their jobs, especially right now with such a shortage. I was talking to a couple of employees last night that were very concerned that their hours have been cut because there's not enough employees for their business to stay open 7 days a week. Obviously, affordable housing options are a critical part of the safety net, and I support the city's effort to provide affordable options, but that's not enough. I've advocated for public-private partnerships as long as I've been on the council, and I'm thrilled that now, 5 years later, we're about to enter in our first partnership like that to build affordable housing on the city-owned Homestake parcel. I think it's crucial that the city continue to support fledgling businesses so they can thrive. We don't have to look any further than Ritual Chocolate or Red Flower Studio to see how businesses can flourish here. Let's invest more in that.
Thank you.
Okay, the next question is from the Park City Community Foundation. You each have 3 minutes to answer it, and again, note that candidates received this question in advance. Given Park City Municipal's commitment to social equity, how will you be prioritizing communities of color, the queer community, seniors, low-income communities, and other marginalized groups as mayor? Ann, will you start since Andy started last time?
Sure, and I'm going to use notes because I have to limit what I have to say here for 3 minutes. I find this question really thought-provoking, and I don't think it's a coincidence that we're having this discussion on Indigenous Peoples Day. I've championed social equity on council, and if I look back on my life's work, it's been focused on identifying and removing barriers. Because you see, I grew up in poverty. I know what it feels like. I know how hard that is. I know what it feels like to be marginalized because of that. As a child, I didn't know places like Park City existed because my family couldn't travel. And yet, I couldn't even dream that I would one day be able to live here. I found this question even more interesting because to me, it's not about prioritizing one group over another. It's about prioritizing representation from all groups on city boards, commissions, and staff. It's prioritizing representation of different voices in nonprofit staffing and on their boards. When I talk about representation, I'm not talking about tokenism. I'm not talking about adding new voices simply so we can check off the diversity box. Because to me, diversity means bringing people to the table. But it's inclusion that allows those voices to be heard, and that is what drives policy change. We've all gotten pretty good at identifying social equity gaps in this community. And now it's time to actually start hearing the voices of our communities of color, queer folks, seniors, low-income communities, the neurodiverse community, women, and other groups that feel marginalized and in the shadows. That's how policy change is driven, by hearing from the very people affected by the inequities that I, as a straight white woman, may not even be aware of. Only by having members of marginalized communities involved in the conversation to find communities and drive policy can true change happen. I think it's time that when the city funding is allocated to nonprofits through special service contracts or other means, or when a fee waiver is requested for a special event, the organization needs to show proof of diversification in their diversity plan. That's how the city can put their money where their mouth is. As far as the city itself, we've come a long way, but we still have a distance to go. Increased focus on diversification in hiring practices and empowering people in marginalized positions to serve in positions of leadership, especially on city council. One important step is a conversation we've often had in the community, and that is to establish a Latino leadership program with the same level of funding and programming as Leadership Park City. Thank you.
Thank you. Andy?
Great, thank you. I think this is a difficult question because we're still seeking these answers in the community, and City Hall has really just begun our equity journey, and I think it's going to be a generational journey as we work our way through this. But it begins with us using an equity lens in how we make decisions at the city, and I also think it's important that we show leadership, that the city be an example of equity. And we've been working on that internally, and I think there's been some great progress made in how we've expanded our equity and diversity within the organization with more inclusive hiring policies, assuring pay parity, which I've been told we recently achieved, and making adjustments to our facilities like gender-neutral bathrooms. Also, things like doing all of our materials in English and in Spanish makes them more accessible to much of our community. And we've launched into a series of internships for the underserved in our community, particularly some exciting ones with neurodiverse individuals. A good example of something that I think had great gains was our Social Equity Innovation Challenge. Council did this at a retreat a couple of years ago, led to a couple of successful programs. Two I'll highlight is the mobile rec trailer, which we now take to neighborhoods and events, and also the Lucky Ones project downstairs, which has just been booming and a great amenity to the community. Other things I'll cite is the city-led support of mental health and wellness. This is an area that our community's really launched into in the last couple of years, and it is absolutely critical. I can't imagine why we didn't do it sooner, and I hope we continue to support that aggressively. Internally, we formed an LGBTQIA+ task force, which has been, they are still finding their footing, but they did some exciting things. We were there for the flag raising this year for Pride Month, and then I was pleased to be able to walk in the Pride Parade with them, holding the banner in the front with Mayor Potter. And I gotta say, the community love and support was amazing. I've walked in a lot of floats and a lot of parades, and I've never seen anything like it. Additionally, the seniors are an issue in the community that we need to address. We talk about equity and we often think about a diversity, but I think we need to include our youth and our seniors in that. And the city council needs to make some commitments to the seniors. We need to resolve the lease, and we need to start talking to them about, could we better integrate the senior center into the Woodside 2 project? So, and last, I just want to mention the good work that's done by the Community Foundation. That's really guiding a lot of what the city is doing right now. We employed them to do a study. They had extensive task force, and they've come back with a focus on three areas: housing, education, and inclusion. And I think that gives us a starting roadmap for the community to get going on this. But as I began with, there's a lot of work to do.
Okay, thank you.
Great. The rest of the questions are a combination of questions we received from the community, questions created by the Park Record and KPCW, and the candidates have not seen these in advance, and they'll each have 2 minutes to answer. The emergence of the COVID-19 pandemic has created change in many facets of daily life. What are a couple of examples of the new normal for Park City? And if your examples are not changes for the better, how will you address them? Andy, let's start with you.
Okay. Well, I touched on one of the big ones in my intro, which is all the people that moved here discovered that they can work from anywhere and that they'd rather work someplace where they love the natural setting and have access. And so we have a lot of new resources and we have new pressures. So I would say that's in the both benefit column and challenges column. But I think it's an exciting column to figure out how we integrate new people here. Communications has been an interesting thing. When COVID hit, we overnight had to figure out how to change the way we communicate with the public. So we immediately switched over to digital communications, mostly Zoom-oriented, and starting doing three roundtables a week for information, including one of those was in Spanish, using both Zoom and Facebook to reach out to the public. Now that we're starting to meet in person again, we're adopting a hybrid model. And I think, as all of you have noticed, that's not gone smoothly, but it's something that's encouraging because now we can have people in person and digitally, which really expands the circle of people we're able to reach out to.
Thank you. And Councilwoman Worrell.
Thank you. I think the biggest change that I've observed is that in childcare. You know, parents are working at home. They're trying to figure out how to juggle their job remotely while taking care of their young child. And now that people have the opportunity to go back in the workforce, many are finding that they simply can't because there aren't the workers in the daycare centers, in the childcare areas, to enable them to do that. PC Tots has capacity in terms of physical space, but they can't find qualified teachers, and they're not alone in that. I think we all saw a childcare area center close out in the Camas area. So that puts more pressure on parents. How do they go back to work? How do we get them back into the workforce that very desperately needs them, and yet they don't have the affordable child care? So I think that's a real challenge for our community and one that we all need to get behind the Early Childhood Alliance as they work on. You know, Andy mentioned communications, and I agree that COVID has given us all different opportunities to connect in different ways. But what it also pointed out is the number of people that depend on the library, that depend on other areas for internet access or even for computers. We even had one resident that took the time to handwrite a long letter to the council during COVID saying, I can't get any information because it's all digital. And so I think that we need to, I've spoken about this many times, I think we need to diversify the way that the council is communicating, the city's communicating with people, and use not only KPCW and the park record and social media, but perhaps some mailings and other ways so we're sure every resident has access to the information that they need.
Thank you.
And just to mention, for that question and the rest of our questions, if either of you want to offer a rebuttal, you may for 30 seconds, and then your opponent could also do the same. No rebuttals needed right now? Okay. And reminder to everybody to please silence your phones if you haven't done that already. Okay. Regional planning is seen as more critical than ever on the Wasatch Back. Do you see a shared vision for the cities and towns of Summit County? If so, please describe that shared vision. Nan, start with you.
I don't think that we've had the opportunity to have those conversations. The Park City Council and the Summit County Council haven't met jointly for as long as I can remember. And I was talking with a county council member and asked them the same question. Do you remember the last time that we were all in the same room? We used to do that quarterly under Mayor Jack Thomas. And I think that that was very helpful when I first joined the council. So we were in the same room talking about similar things. I know that the mayors may meet jointly through COG, and that's at one level, but the councils should be included in those conversations as well. So I don't think that there's a coordination. I don't think that there's the knowledge of each other, and as I talked about earlier, collaboration is built on mutual trust and respect. You can't do that if you don't know each other. And so I would advocate for all of the towns on the park, on the Wasatch Back, to get together and work together.
Thank you. Andy?
Yeah, I think we do somewhat share a vision. It's certainly varied and not always consistent, but when we did the Vision 2020, we not only had residents of 84060, but we had residents from the region that participated, and their desires and needs were very similar. We saw a lot of consistency there. And there's been some talk about the relationship with the county being broken. I would absolutely disagree with that. I would say it's highly functional, and we have example after example working together on COVID, working together on transportation, working together on the hideout litigation. What it isn't is chummy right now. Those relationships and personalities ebb and flow, but that hasn't gotten in the way of us being able to work well together. But when we talk regionalism, I want to talk bigger than just Summit County. Most of our pressures are coming from even outside the county at this point, coming from Wasatch County in particular and Salt Lake and the Wasatch Front. And I think it's absolutely critical. We have strong relationships and work with both of them. And that's something I have been doing. Even to the point where last year I went to the retreat for the Heber City Council to work with their council and talk about planning. And something the Mayor Potter of Heber and myself have been working on with our two counties and not gotten a lot of support on, but I think maybe as the crisis passes and they free up bandwidth, we have got Mountain Lands Association of Government, who is an overseeing planning body for Summit, Wasatch, and Utah County. They've agreed to come up and do a broad vision for Summit and Wasatch County. And that's something I'd very much like to see happen. We need to talk about transportation and housing and workforce and open space and plan for growth together. So I hope we go forward with that as a next step.
Okay,
oh, and I just want to add one point, and we'll throw this under the rebuttal point, but it keeps coming up that we haven't been having quarterly meetings like we used to do with the school board, the county, and the city. And I will point out that we did those meetings while I'd been mayor until COVID hit. And both entities have not been meeting very much in person. So that was not a matter of we're not getting along and we're not meeting. It's simply been a matter of COVID. But during that, we have met on a regular basis. In fact, during the crisis, I was meeting with them on a daily basis.
Okay. Nan, do you have anything to add to that one?
I do. I think that, you know, I think it's one thing for the mayor to work at an upper level and then not share that information with the councils. I think it's another thing for the councils to work closely together so that we have all the voices at the table. And there's Zoom. We could have met virtually with the different councils.
Well, I think there's a couple of assumptions.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I get rebuttal, right?
Yes, go ahead.
Since I was on my normal time. I think there's an assumption in there that I wasn't sharing information with the council, and I would refute that. There haven't been any secrets between what's communicated to me by Summit County and the council. And secondly, under your credentials, you keep talking about the regular conversations you have with the Summit County Council, but then you said you need to have the opportunity to meet with them. So I think you need to pick a position there.
Okay.
You want me to rebut?
Well, you've each had one rebuttal, and there are a lot of questions, so.
Okay.
Okay, the next question is, you've lived in Park City long enough to know that there are things you like and things you would change about living here. What two things do you like best about living in Park City, and what two things would you like to change? Mayor, we'll start with you.
I have to pick one thing? I don't think I can do that. I mean, the natural setting is amazing. Our historic character is amazing, and I still love the fact it's a small-town community. And, you know, when you do elections, you go out and you knock on doors and you meet your neighbors out there. So those are all things I'd like to see us hold on to. If there's one thing I could change, I think we all hate traffic and congestion and sort of the crush of people. And if there were a better way to disperse that or mitigate it, I don't think we're ever going to cure it, but I think that would make us all happier.
Thank you. Councilman Worrell.
Yeah, I love the people here, and I moved here from the deep south, where people weren't necessarily welcoming to newcomers, and I received such a warm welcome here, and that's why I said I plunged when I got here, because everybody wanted to introduce me to someone else. There were amazing opportunities that everybody wanted to include me in, and I really hope that our new residents are having that very same experience. Another thing I love about here is the proximity to anything that I want to do outside, whether that's skiing or hiking or biking, and how quick and easy that is, and not a huge production to have to drive an hour or wherever. Our son just moved back from Denver because it took so long to get to the natural resources that he loved. One of the things that I dislike about living here is, and we've had several people comment over the last several months over the summer, is that there's no more twofers and what at the restaurants. And I know that sounds silly, but what that represents is that we've become so popular, even during what we used to consider our off season, that our restaurants no longer have to offer that. And I think that that's a concern. And again, going back to events, it kind of all ties in with that. Our residents are tired. You know, during COVID, they were like, gosh, I wish we had something to do. And then this year I've heard, oh my gosh, when are these other people going away, our visitors going away, so that we can have our town back? So I think that there's got to find a balance there.
Thank you.
So we received an assortment of candidate-specific questions from the community, and we chose one for each of you. Mayor Andy, yours is first. Some have criticized you being out of the country on vacation when the pandemic shutdown began and not returning more quickly to oversee events. Would you explain your rationale on that?
Yeah, my timing was terrible. I was on a surf trip in Mexico when COVID hit. It went very quickly. I think on a Wednesday things were shut down, and I had a flight scheduled out for Saturday morning. And I contemplated whether I should try to move that flight up. It looked like there was enough chaos that by moving that flight, I might have had a chance of missing it altogether. So I ended up spending the next 3 days on the phone in regular contact with the city manager and with Steve Joyce, who was the mayor pro tem, trying to work remote on that. And I was back here Saturday. And from then on, I've been steady at the helm. And it was, I have to say, as my time as mayor, I've never been so busy as during COVID. We were in emergency ops meeting every single day when it first started, and then those began to space out. But as we had to retool the whole government, it was a crazy time. So it's regretful I was out of town, but I certainly wasn't out of touch, and I got back here as quickly as I could.
Thank you.
And Nan, your question is this. You have criticized the leadership of City Hall during the campaign and have questioned the public process taken on certain issues, such as the soils repository, but you are a sitting city councilor. Why didn't you do more to influence the process and address those concerns?
I think that's a valid question, and in retrospect, I should have. You know, I think that what happened with the soils, if we're going to speak specifically to that was on the city council agenda in June, right after when everybody was trying to figure out what in the world they were going to do with COVID. How long were they locked in their house? What were they going to do with their children? How were they going to keep their jobs? How are they going to even get groceries into their houses? And that was on a city council agenda that was published in the news, that was published online on a Monday afternoon for a Thursday Thursday meeting. People had other things to do than search the city website to find out what we were going to be talking about on Thursday. And so that conversation happened. No, you know, a vote was not taken at that point in time. But to say that the public knew about it and the public had the opportunity to weigh in, technically they did, but they didn't know. And I think that that comes back to my point of we've got to find other ways to communicate with the residents of Park City about what the council is doing instead of letting the council get all the way out here and then the public finally figuring out and saying, wait a minute, whoa, how did you get out here? And I didn't know about that. So I think that there's opportunities. So Summit County Council publishes their agenda in the Park Record. Why doesn't Park City do that? I've asked that numerous times. You know, I think that there's other ways that we can be communicating with folks about what's going on instead of putting the burden on them to come back and look online to find out what the council is going to be talking about.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to...
Can I refute? I'm not going to refute as much as I want to agree and add to that.
No, I don't think just for the purpose of these questions being very specific to the candidates.
Okay.
I'm going to not allow that at this time.
Let's go back to questions for both of you. You as candidates don't differ significantly on too many issues. One voter told KPCW they're using the same language to talk about the same priorities. Is this election about personalities over platforms? And if it's not, where do you most sharply differ on policies and priorities? Oh, I'm sorry. Nan, you go first.
Thank you.
I thought you were both thinking.
No, we're like, okay. I think that where we differ most is in leadership style and in tone. You know, I've lived a life of service. I tend to be in the trenches. I lead in the trenches. I've subscribed to servant leadership, which means that the leader empowers the people that they're leading to accomplish great things. And when you achieve a goal, instead of saying, look what I did, you turn around and say, look what we did collectively. It's a matter of we versus me. And I think that that you will not see my ego getting in the way and saying, I did this, I did that, I saved all the open space. Andy, when you look at some of your ads, when you look at some of the things you've said, it's like you're taking credit for, you know, all the open space that's been saved. You're taking credit for a lot of things that the city has done. And in fact, it was a matter of the residents. It was a matter of the council. It was a matter of a lot of different factors coming together to make things happen. And I think that's our biggest difference.
Okay, thank you. Andy?
Yeah, I think I will agree insofar as I think Nan and I over the years, both as council and the time I've been mayor and she was on council, we've agreed on a lot. And there are probably only a handful of times we've disagreed on things policy-wise. And it does come down to a little bit of a style and tone. And I think the difference between us is I've demonstrated more conviction. I'm not afraid of tackling complex and difficult challenges and building coalitions. I don't just want to study them and create more task forces to look at them. I go out, I listen, I get direction from the public. The Vision 2020, the public said, here's exactly what we want you to do, and we want you to do it with urgency. And when people say I have an agenda, I do. It's that. And we spent a year listening. We sat through, I co-facilitated, so I'll bet I was in 30 or more meetings between the forums and the task force hearing what the community wants. I don't think we need to study it more. We need to make a good plan. And that doesn't mean being reckless, but sometimes you're going to make decisions that not everybody's going to agree with. And when people say you're not listening, you should look and consider if that's the case. But sometimes it just means they don't agree with you. There is a difference there. And as far as the criticism there that I'm saying I think I've been very clear that everything is done as a group, that you do things as a coalition and you do it with the support of the community, and the community doesn't support it, you stand down, just like the Arts and Culture District and the Soils. And I think that shows by who's supporting me. You've got three of the council members standing solidly behind me because they believe I can build those coalitions, I can listen to their views, and effectively move things forward. So yes, I'm a little bit uncomfortable with campaigns. People want to know what you've been involved with, and you make bullet points of those. But at the end of the day, I think anybody that understands how local government works, and particularly the mayor's role, it's done together. It's done as a group, and you have to have the support of both the community and the council to get anything done.
Andy,
that's something I'm proven capable of.
We're going to jump in
and
hit your time. Okay, so we received, a number of questions on a number of topics, and we're going to pivot to a little bit of a different topic here. Sustainable tourism. What does that mean to you? What's the city's role, and what is the role of elected officials in sustainable tourism? Nan, we'll begin with you.
We started going back to Vision 2020, you know, sustainable tourism was one of the topics that came up that our residents really wanted us to look at, really wanted us to take leadership on. And then we were fortunate to have Jennifer come in as the new president of the chamber. And her background in sustainable tourism couldn't have been a better fit for what the city was thinking about doing, except the difference was she has the expertise in that. She's done it. She knows the importance of having the audit, or I guess it's an audit that's going on currently. And so I'm looking forward to the results of that audit to see how do we stand with sustainable tourism? Where are we weak? Where do we need to work together? And I think that the city's role is to stand side by side with the chamber as a plan is made and work together on that.
Andy, go ahead.
Well, I talked a little bit about this earlier, but I think there's a couple of approaches to sustainable tourism. There's the mechanisms, which are the policies you put in place to balance things out, and then there's the filters or lenses you use. And I want to talk a little bit about the lenses I think we ought to be using. I think everything we do, we need to put locals first. And I think we need to value community over economy. And if we do those two things, we are going to continue to have an amazing town. And the tourists will come. If you look at our most popular districts, our most popular businesses and restaurants, they're the authentic ones. They're the ones the locals love. And so I think what we have here is amazing. It's an incredible quality of life. And that quality of life is something valued by our residents, but it's also something sought after by our tourists. Many of them, we take it for granted, but the reality is we live other people's vacations. Many of them work their butts off all year so they can take 1 week and come out and experience the life we do. So if we protect our life, we protect our quality of life, and we invest in our neighborhoods, we invest in our small businesses, the tourism will do just fine here.
Thank you.
Okay, also in the tourism and economy category of questions, this one from the Chamber. At a recent workforce panel, we learned about the demographic trends driving the labor shortage. With astronomical housing costs and low unemployment, employers are raising wages, and still, everyone from the Starbucks to the DMV is closing its doors, at least partially, and the school district is reportedly struggling to create a sufficient substitute teacher pool. What does this mean for winter, and how are we going to house our seasonal workforce starting next month? And that's starting with you, Andy, please.
Yeah, this is on the edge of a crisis at this point. I mean, we are really struggling with workforce. We're struggling with housing. About the only thing I can say is we're better off than many of our peers. You look at Colorado right now, and it's hit the point where I talk to the mayors and council members over there, and a lot of their restaurants are only open 4 days a week and dinner only. They're so short on workforce. And so we are struggling through this. I think it's a community problem. I don't want to take too much ownership as a city because I think that the city, the county, the schools, and the business community and the chamber all need to be working on this. It's very clear to us that there is a acute lack of rental housing. And so the city's next several projects are going to be focused on affordable rentals as opposed to affordable for sales, which I think will help with workforce. We need to continue to keep our transit systems up and running. When COVID hit, one of the things we realized is on our big entry express routes, about 50% of the riders were transit dependent. So even though our buses were fairly empty, we needed to keep those buses running because there are people that couldn't get to work without those. We need to be conscious of that. Nan brought up earlier childcare. That is an area that is just killing our young families right now, both the affordability and availability of it. And you know, that's one of the reasons I think the school school bond is so important. They're looking at putting pre-K in place in all their elementary schools, which is going to take some of the pressure off of childcare. So I hope not only does that bond pass, but things move up quickly. But the short answer is we're going to all have to work on this together. I think our businesses are going to struggle this winter to keep employees, and the owners and the managers are going to be going to work. I know that. I ran a business through workforce shortages, and it's not easy, but it's what you need to do. We're a resilient town. We'll get through it. But we need to work together to come up with long-term solutions.
Okay. Thank you. Nan?
Yeah, I agree. We've got to work together. It's not just the city's responsibility to figure out how we're going to house the workforce. That's got to come in conjunction with the resorts, who bring in the largest portion of the workforce. You know, as a former health professional, I get very concerned about some of the conditions that our J1s are finding when they get here, and properties that they've been advertised don't meet code. I understand that there's been some J1s that have rented space that was viewed one place on the one way on the internet, and when they got there, it was an electrical closet that they were supposed to live in as a couple. And so I think that there's all sorts of issues that we need to be addressing with that. The ability to regulate short-term rentals and Airbnb, the RBOs, has been taken away from us by the legislature. And so I think that we as a city need to work closely with the different properties in town and see how can we turn some of those short-term rentals into long-term rentals. And that will help with the housing of our workforce. I think that also we need to figure out with the business community, how can we come alongside of you? How can we help you find housing for your employees? What can we do to help you incentivize employees to stay with you? I know of several businesses that offer ski lift passes, and that's a big incentive for them. So what other things can we be doing as a community to help the businesses incentivize the employees that they have?
Thank you.
Shifting gears to another topic, arts and culture. This question was submitted by Aldi Milliken, who's the executive director of the Kimball Arts Center. The question is, will your mayorship focus on retaining world-class established cultural organizations within Park City? And if so, how? Nan, let's begin with you.
Well, the short answer is yes. I've been a big proponent of the Arts and Culture District until it morphed from what its original scope was and the budget just got out of control. You know, Aldi, I so welcome you to town and the vision that you've brought. But I think that when we talk about the Arts and Culture District, obviously, with your new leadership, the vision is shifting a little bit for what the Kimball's role there would be. And Sundance is also having a brand new CEO or president. I'm not sure what the correct title is for her. And so that's going to shift some, too. I think it's time for Park City Municipal, as well as Kimball Arts Center and Sundance, to come back to the table and say, things have changed from where they were in 2017 when we originally made these commitments to each other that we wanted to form this district. What's changed? What's different? What's the same? What can we afford to do? And how can we work together? What other partners do we need to bring in to make this happen? I don't believe that the city, Kimball, and Sundance are the only partners that could help make Bonanza Park a big success. I think we need to look at other partners as well.
I think I'm in agreement here that arts and culture is certainly important to this community. It has long been important to our community. It wasn't just skiers that moved here, but it was a lot of hippies and artists, and it's part of our DNA, and it's something that we need to continue to invest in. I think it's also important as we both age as a community and as climate impacts become more clear and we lose more and more freezing days, we need to diversify both our economy for our tourists, but our activities for our locals, and arts and culture is an excellent way to do that. As far as the Arts and Culture District goes, I think we're actually in a good place now in that we're paused and we're going to go back out and talk to the community more about what we're going to do there. There were a lot of questions, does that fit in with our goals going forward? So I think it's worth taking the time. This is a generational project, and we want to get it right. It could be an opportunity on a lot of fronts, whether it ends up being an arts and culture district, whether it ends up being a housing village, some combination, or just a community gathering area. I think the big win there is when we bought that piece of land and blocked the large development that nobody wanted that was going in. So my hope, though, is ultimately whatever the city does, I would like to see us work with Kimball and Sundance to make sure they have a home. When we purchased that piece of land, they had temporary headquarters next door, and both of them asked if they could buy a piece of that land, and they've been a big part of our discussions going forward. They've invested quite a bit in their designs and their commitments to this and initial fundraising, and so I'd like to find a way the city can support them, because I think they are going to be two of the key engines moving forward if we want to continue to build both arts and culture in our community.
Thank you.
If I could just nuance that, can I rebut?
Absolutely.
Not necessarily rebut, but just nuance that a little bit. You know, I've talked earlier about my leadership style is about honoring commitments that were made. The city did make a commitment to both of those organizations, and that's why I think it's critical that we sit down with them now and revisit that commitment and then include the community in that conversation.
Thank you. Mayor, anything else from you?
Yeah, I just want to touch on something actually Nan had said earlier. She said she was supportive of the district until it had morphed and changed. But I'm wondering when you feel it morphed and changed, because it was the mid-December council meeting where Councilman Joyce very eloquently went on and told us how it had morphed, it changed, it had blown the budget, and your response is, I'm still in, that I'm still fully supportive. So when do you feel like that went off the rails?
I feel like it went off the rails when it went over $100 million, and it wasn't over $100 million at that point in time. I think that the original scope of that district was to focus on arts and culture and housing for the artists. And then it morphed into, now we have 60 affordable units. The original project was for 20. Now it's up to 60. And the transit hub that was there has gone away. And so I think that those are major differences in that. Do I still support the arts and culture aspect of the district? Absolutely, I do.
Nan, I'm going to cut you off and allow Andy to one more opportunity to speak, another 30 seconds.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the number came up there, but when Steve talked about it, he was talking somewhere between 90 and 100 million at that point about all the add-ons. So I'm just curious when you came to that realization that you no longer supported it.
Not at that price.
Okay, to stick with our format, let's go on. Let's move into growth and development. Community question, where do you stand on the bond issues, the $50 million county land bond and the school district's $79 million bond, and why do you have the positions you do? Start with Andy.
Okay. Yes. I'm very supportive of both. I've always been very supportive of open space. I believe it's the only silver bullet we have to block growth in Utah. We have no other tool that's that effective. A $50 million bond spread over the entire county ends up being a very small impact, and it could make a big difference in both protecting our natural setting and protecting our communities. And I know a lot of that money will probably be spent on the east side since we've bought most of the open space on the west. I'm okay with that. The pressures that come from there will be our pressures as well. So. Secondly, education. I am unequivocally supportive of the bond. I come from a family of teachers. My mother was a teacher, my sister is a teacher, and my niece is about ready to be a teacher. And I started in outdoor education, and I believe in the power of education, and I believe that that is one of the bedrocks of a community, is to have strong schools and to invest in those schools. And having participated in the 2 years of outreach they did with this bond, I think it is fiscally responsible. I think they've gotten a ton of feedback from the community, and it's a well-conceived plan. I am not an educational expert, so I can't really speak to the grade realignment, but it seems like the smart people in the room all think it's a good way to go. And then, as I mentioned earlier, I think that the commitment they're making to pre-K and all of their elementary schools is going to be perhaps the most important part of all this. That is going to have a profound impact on our community. So I support them both.
Okay, thank you. Nan?
I struggle with any time that we're going to add a new tax, because we have workforce that are struggling to live here. We have seniors that are struggling to live here. We have a middle class that is struggling to stay here. And I think that any time we add anything to the tax bill, it makes it just that much more difficult. So I look very critically any time we're doing that. And I've had a lot of conversations with the school district trying to understand what the benefits of adding, passing that bond would be. And I've come to realize that I do support it, because we have an amazing opportunity here with our students. We have phenomenal curriculum that our school board and our school district has worked hard to develop. And those are going to produce the educated workforce that we need in the future when we can entice our young people to come back here after they've graduated. But the facilities that we have don't support that curriculum. For example, we have a robotics class that's award-winning, and yet they meet in a closet because there simply isn't enough space there. So we need to get the facilities up to match the curriculum so that really enhances the learning experience. And in terms of the open space bond, I am supportive of that because I believe that it will prevent some growth. And the last thing that we need in any other part of this county is more potential for growth, and it will protect that.
Okay, thank you.
The Deer Valley Resort and Park City Mountain Resort projects, if approved, will further strain the city's infrastructure. Is the city positioned to welcome that kind of growth into the community? Councilwoman, let's start with you.
I'm sorry, you got muffled with your mask. Could you repeat it one more time?
I apologize, yes.
Thank you.
The Deer Valley and PCMR projects, if approved, will further strain the city's infrastructure. Is the city positioned to welcome that kind of growth into the community?
That growth is already approved, and I think the city's responsibility now is to figure out how do we mitigate that and how do we connect it. You know, as a former planning commissioner, I'm really focused on connectivity. And it has bothered me since the time I was on Planning Commission that any time that a project is considered, it's considered by itself instead of how does it fit into the overall picture. I think we are at a critical point right now where we need to figure out connectivity. We've got potential at Park City Mountain Base. We've got potential at Deer Valley Base. We've got the Arts and Culture District or Bonanza Park or whatever it's going to be there. We also have development, big development rights out at the film studio still. So this is the time for us to step back and say, how do these all connect? And what are we going to be doing to mitigate? Just because Park City mitigates their traffic and Deer Valley mitigates that, how do they all connect there? So my focus right now is on connectivity and an overarching plan.
Mayor.
Well, one of those projects is in front of the Planning Commission, and the other one will soon be. And the Planning Commission's job is to look at that mitigation and see what is required for those projects, whether they can absorb the traffic, whether the infrastructure is in place. And if it isn't, they need to work with the applicants to make sure that happens. So I'm confident they'll do that. I keep hearing that Park City doesn't have a plan, and I just have to disagree with that a little bit. We do have a general plan. We just completed a very extensive vision, which is going to lead probably next year to a full renovation of our general plan. We've got a long-range, short-range, and active transportation study, which we're updating right now. Those should come in the middle of next winter, so we're going to have a comprehensive transportation study. Now, in terms of, I think some would like the fact that we could look at these sort of in a broad spectrum and block these developments, and it doesn't work that way. Under state law, we're kind of given various tools, and that isn't one of them. We can't say globally, if we build this here, it's going to cause traffic somewhere else. But I do think it's critical we get these two projects right. Park City is largely built out, and really there's only two big developments left, which are both our base developments. And we've learned a lot of lessons along the way. We've made a lot of mistakes, and I think it is absolutely critical. We work with the applicants, we work with the resorts, and we get these right. And just my view overall on growth, I've never felt like this community wants more growth. That isn't something I hear very much of. So I think we need to hold these projects to their strict entitlements. I don't see a need for additional height or variances. And if we are going to reduce parking, which I think has a place in the conversation, there needs to be a commensurate compensation to offset that, whether that's new transit systems or alternative park and rides. They don't get off scot-free.
Thank you.
All right, going back to more general questions. Transparency is a term that's been heavily used during the election. What does transparent government look like to you, and how have you pursued it in your time in office? And please cite specific examples. And Andy, we'll start with you.
Yeah, I think I lead off. I think transparency has been misused a lot during this election cycle. Transparency is actually, there is a state mandated process that we follow as elected officials on how we notice our meetings, how we run those meetings, what kind of public hearings we have. And we have strictly followed that process. If we didn't, we would be breaking the law. And I have a feeling we'd hear about it from KPCW and the Park Record. In fact, we did once. When I was a new mayor, we made a mistake. We got some poor legal advice, and we held a meeting in closed session, which we weren't supposed to. And my response was to immediately release the tapes of that meeting, issue a public apology, and deal with the consequences of that. There were things that said in that meeting that were embarrassing to some. And we dealt with that as a council. And following that, I had conversations with the city attorney and the city manager, and I said, we need to be more strict about how we do these closed meetings, and we've dramatically reduced the amount of time we spend in closed meetings. What I hear, though, when people talk about transparency, I think some folks are referring to they want more engagement. And public engagement is something we can always do a better job of. That is the holy grail when you're an elected official, is how do you fill a room like this for a conversation? How do you make sure people are listening, and how do you come to them? And that's something we've been very active on. We've dramatically increased our forums going out to the public. We've done additional mailings. We're doing things in Spanish. And we're even going to the point on controversial projects, we're going door to door and knocking on the doors of the neighborhoods to make sure people understand what's coming to them. But I continue to hear from the public they want more, and I think that's a reasonable request. And so we are going to continue to build upon that. In fact, the city has had very few new hires recently, but one thing we did is we just invested in two more communications people so we can continue to ramp up our engagement.
Thank you. Ma'am?
For me, transparency is a critical part of the public process, and I mentioned earlier that I'm a real geek about that, because I believe that the public needs to never be surprised by what the city is doing. The city needs to be able to come alongside the council or the mayor or whatever movement, whatever issue is in front of us, so that they are just as informed as the council is as decisions are being made, and they have the opportunity to weigh in on those. You know, when I talk about surprises, you know, I'm tired of talking about the murals, but the community is not, and I hear it constantly, that we failed the community, and I've been very vocal about that. I spoke out about it immediately after those murals were put on Main Street. Had nothing to do with the message, but it had to do with the process. You know, our police weren't informed. The very people on Main Street that needed to know about them were not informed. It was not a public conversation. It was not part of the public process. And you can hide behind the fact that, oh, this is, you know, technically it's okay that we do that. It's not okay to surprise the public. It's not okay to surprise the taxpayers with what we're going to be doing with their dollars.
I'd like to refute with a question, actually. I just said, and this is for Nan. I mean, Nan, a couple of the areas that you've really taken leadership in and taken is equity. You were co-lead with me on arts and culture, and you've been the liaison and lead with seniors. And these are three of the areas that the city has struggled mightily with: miscommunications and, as you put it, people feeling surprised. In fact, so far with the seniors, that you called me in and asked me to help you with that relationship because you were struggling with it. So as a council member, you have an opportunity to manage those relationships and weigh in on things we need to do. How do you think being mayor would change how you would approach those and you would get different results?
Andy, that's 30 seconds.
I'm sorry?
Oh, I was saying Andy was at 30 seconds for his rebuttal.
Oh, okay. I think that being mayor would give me a greater clout. As a council member, people always are looking like, well, what does the rest of the council think? What does the mayor think? I think that being in the position of mayor gives you a bigger seat at the table. It gives you some more credibility with those groups. I think that the conversation with the seniors, as we all know, has been extremely complicated. And we're making progress now. But indeed, I did ask for help with that because I didn't feel like it was going well. And I, as a council member, did not have the authority to make the promises that the seniors were asking us to make.
Thank you. Next question. Traffic remains one of the significant problems the city faces despite the efforts to alleviate it. What specific measures should City Hall implement over the next 4 years to make it easier to get around Park City? Nan, begin with you.
When you look at the number of cars that are coming into town every day, they're single occupancy. The majority of them are single occupancy. And many of those are our workforce. And so I think that there's some low-hanging fruit there with the workforce. You know, we just say, well, you shouldn't be parking here, you shouldn't be parking there. Let's give people opportunities. Let's give people convenient alternatives to bringing their cars into town. I fully recognize that there's a large portion of our workforce that needs their vehicles because they have to be able to go from job to job. If they're in construction or if they're in a service industry that they need their tools, they're not going to be able to van share. But I think that there are opportunities to van share up from Salt Lake City. There's opportunities to work with UTA. There's opportunities to work with Summit County so that we do have buses that run back and forth between Salt Lake and Park City on the weekends when we need our workforce here, on holidays when we need our workforce here. So I think that's some low-hanging fruit that we work with that. You know, I'm getting a lot of pushback from our residents about, I don't want to get on a bus. I don't intend to get on a bus. And so I think that we definitely have some work to do there in terms of incentives and what will make it as convenient as taking your car. We were making great progress with transit, and then COVID hit, and people got used to being back into their cars. And so I think that we need to rethink our transit system. There's a lot of neighborhoods in town that aren't served by transit. I live in one. I don't have an option but to take my car, especially during the winter months. And so I think that microtransit is something that we need to seriously look at as a community, and we can learn from what's happening in Summit County with their their partnership. And I'm out of time.
Andy, go ahead.
Okay. Well, the bad news is we're not going to solve traffic. We are geographically constrained in a valley with two roads in and out and historic structures and rock walls on either side. So unless we build decking or deep tunnels, we're not going to be able to take in more cars. And so I think it's crazy to think that bringing more cars here or adding parking is going to solve anything. It's just going to create more congestion. So I think ultimately we're going to have large park and rides on the outside of town and a very effective system to bring them in. In the short term, that effective system is going to be dedicated bus lanes with rapid bus that comes in every 10 to 15 minutes and set conveniently to get people where they need to go, which is largely the resorts and Main Street. I think we can also get a lot more creative locally. Nan's correct. We haven't done a great job of servicing our neighborhoods, and that's one of the reasons I'm excited about the fact we've split our transit districts so the county can focus regionally and we can focus locally. I would like to see a microtransit program in place by the end of 2022. I think our residents have been waiting for years for that, and I think it's time for us to try some things. I also want to see us start putting some of our transit money into walkability and active transportation. That pound for pound, there is no money better spent in this town or more beloved than multi-purpose trails and bike lanes and ways that people can move around, whether it's by bike, by skate, by ski, by foot. So I think we need to further invest in that. And then last, I think we need to get creative. Long term, those bus lanes might turn into rail or monorail, or we also have some opportunities in the near future to look at aerial. Council did a feasibility study on using aerial as transportation between our commercial districts and maybe even from Quinns Junction. Next year, we're expecting to have a robust discussion on that, and I think it's going to be interesting. I expect it to be controversial, but it is something. In an area where you're physically constrained, it is a great way to move people around, and I look forward to that conversation.
Thank you.
Okay, still on the transit topic, this is a question from the community. What do you think about how we got to a place that needed to split transit costs by funding separate transit systems, city and county? Is it cost effective? Are we saving money as taxpayers and getting better service or not? And that's Andy first, please.
Okay, certainly. Well, back in the 70s, the city had the foresight, or the community had the foresight, to put a transit system in place back when nobody could imagine us really needing very much. And they got a steady tax stream coming out of tourism to invest in that district. And that district has steadily grown over time. And ever since the Olympics, the county, who has been they've been a contractor to that system, our relationship with them has expanded, as have their funding sources and as have their needs. So we went from running just routes in town, mostly to our resorts, to running out to Kimball Junction, and then the county began to request Pine Brook, Summit Park, Jeremy, Camas, and now there's a push for Heber. And certainly we are supportive of all those routes, but I believe the city had no place in being a regional transit provider. Transit had grown to be our largest department, our biggest challenge with the workforce, and frankly, something very difficult to manage that was pulling away time. And meanwhile, we were neglecting our neighborhoods. We were not focusing on getting creative and finding ways to service our residents. So I think it made a lot of sense. The county at the time wanted to have have more control over the transit district. They wanted to have more say. The city wanted to focus internally. So we mutually agreed on splitting the district. And it was something that we were going to take 3 to 5 years to do. When COVID hit, the county decided that they were in a position to accelerate that, that they had COVID relief funding that helped them do it, and they had the time to focus on it. So on July 1st, we split the two districts. I think they've continued to serve the community well. Yes, there probably is some overlap on staffing and bureaucracy, but hopefully there's also an increase in service. And I represent the Park City taxpayers and residents, and I think it's going to be a more effective and more efficient system for them. And I am comfortable that the county will work with Wasatch County and Salt Lake and really become a true regional provider. And maybe there's a day where we hand everything over to them and they run with it, and we'll wait and see.
Okay, thank you. Van?
Yeah, I think it's too early to tell exactly how well the split is going to work. I mean, it just happened in July, and obviously Summit County is working out some details with their system. I'm really excited, as I've mentioned before, to learn from them and learn from what mistakes, if you want to use that word, they've made with microtransit and how they will improve it. I think that will be lessons well learned for us as we think about implementing some sort of a microtransit system. I'm a big fan of a hub and spoke system where you have shorter routes, and by splitting this the transit system, it gives us an opportunity to do that. So the routes are shorter, and they bring them back. You bring you back to a hub, so that you don't have to go all around the city anytime that you want to. You know, if you want to go from Park Meadows to Deer Valley, it's quite the journey, and people don't do it because it takes too long. It's not convenient, and so I think that having the ability to focus on local routes is going to be a big boon for our taxpayers. But again, I think we need to be patient and see how this all shakes out.
Okay, thank you.
This is an appropriate question, given that we're starting to see some snowfall on the top of our mountains. Do you support the effort to seek another Olympics? If so, how would hosting a second Olympics benefit Park City? And if you don't support the effort, why not? Nan, go ahead.
I wasn't here for the 2002 Olympics, so selfishly, I would love to experience that. People that were here for the 2002 Olympics, I'm not hearing a lot of enthusiasm for them coming back. You know, they had a great time, but they recognized the impacts that it had on the community. I think that that's a conversation that's overdue for us to have with our town. Are they inevitable coming here? You know, if Salt Lake gets the bid, are we obligated to participate in them? Probably, and if that happens, I think our focus needs to be on our local residents and how do we mitigate the impacts of those games coming here. How are we going to mitigate the traffic? How are we going to mitigate the growth? How are we going to mitigate the number of people that are in town? How are we going to mitigate the security issues that come with those games? So there's all sorts of things that have to be considered. And I think as we do consider those, it needs to be an ongoing public conversation. We need to look at lessons learned from the 2002 Olympics and go forward for there. I do see some, if the Olympics do come, there might be possible benefits, you know, to our transportation system. There would be Olympic dollars that we might be able to invest to do some projects that we otherwise wouldn't be able to do. But I think we need to step back and actually have that community conversation, because we haven't.
Thank you. Andy, go ahead.
Yeah, I was here for 2002, and it was amazing. And I will say, for those of you that were there, was it not the best traffic management ever in town? I wish it were like that all the time. Locals had the green light to move around while everybody else had to bus in. The reality with the Olympics is it's not going to be our choice. This will be the Utah Games, and Park City may not have a choice whether we participate in it or not. That being said, we have been very included in the planning and the bid process at a foundational level. And I have to say that these games have the opportunity to be very different. The International Olympic Committee wants to make some big changes. They want to make the games athlete-centric again, get away from all the commercialism and focus on the athletes. They want them to be fiscally responsible. The prices have ballooned, so only petro states want to host these. They want these in real, authentic mountain towns that reflect their culture, and they want them to be 100% net zero, a climate-friendly game. And I think those all fit with our values. So the Olympics has the potential to be a good fit for our community and really part of our culture. Right now, we have a seat at the table. I am on the executive committee, and I'm co-chair of the Host Venues Community Committee, which is talking to all the venues in the communities about what an Olympics could look like in their community. I think we would be foolish to walk away from that at this point. It gives us lots of opportunities, and it gives us a very positive thing we can work on a state level, which has all kinds of benefits. But at the end of the day, this is going to be a community decision. So when this gets real and a bid begins on this, which I expect we probably will see in the next year or two, we're going to have a broad community conversation. We're going to have to lay out the pros and cons. And at the end of the day, it's up to all of you. So personally, I think we could do this in a fun way. It could bolster us just like the athletes training for the games. We could train up as a community and use it to fix a lot of our transportation and housing infrastructure. But it's going to be a difficult choice because there are definitely detriments as well.
Okay, thank you. Speaking of community decisions, what would you do differently to address the issue of the soils repository decision? What's your take on why it wasn't supported by so many throughout the city and county? And what happens next? Andy, you first.
Yeah, I think the soils project was put on hold. Council was trying to deal with a 12-year-old issue, a giant pile of soils we had out on a piece of land called the Gordo parcel that ultimately needs to be put in a repository. And talking with the state, the best solution appeared to be to put it right on site there so we don't have to move it. We could put a repository right there. When we looked at doing that, we said that would be a great opportunity to deal with soils for our housing projects, for the Arts and Culture District, and under our roads. It turns out these soils are not only under Old Town and Prospector, but they also were used as road base in the 70s. So every time we do a major road project, a tunnel, pipes, those sort of things, we're dealing with them. But the community made it utterly clear that they didn't support that approach. They don't want a repository in Park City. So we put that project on pause. It's not our job to force things. And so at this point, what we have asked the staff is to go out and look at different options and come back sometime early next year and present those to the community. And we can look at what our different options are, what our locations are, what the costs are, and have a broader conversation. And, you know, in retrospect, that's where we should have started. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, sometimes you make mistakes, and the question is, how do you address it? We took note, we paused it, and we're going to try to do it right the second time.
Thank you. Nan?
Yeah, I spoke earlier. I think that this is an example of the council got ahead of the community. And, you know, I certainly COVID had a lot to do with that and people being distracted and looking at different things. But when the community engaged, they engaged. And I think that it's unfortunate that there was some labeling that went on, that if people didn't agree that there should be, that that's a good place for the repository, that they were negative or that they were misinformed. I think that people did take a lot of time. People gave public comment with very informed opinions, and they were differing opinions. But each person that made comments had done some research and had looked at different studies. And so I think that I have never heard this community, I've said this before, speak with a louder voice or a more unified voice than they did when it came to soils. And I think that we as elected officials needed to heed that and listen to the public. We weren't elected to do what our personal agenda was or what we wanted to push forward. We were elected to represent the voices of this community, and they spoke very loudly and unified.
Thank you. And this is a follow-up question to that topic, and this was submitted by Sherry Harding. The question is, how do you propose dealing with Park City's historic mine waste and mill tailings, which are widespread in our town? Would you support a global soil sampling and an analysis program, including publishing the analytical results? Nan, go ahead.
Oh, absolutely, I would. I think that data speaks really loudly, and I think that was part of the problem when we were talking about the arts and culture soils or what actually was going into that repository was that there wasn't the current data. You know, the soil samples that we have, if we just use Bonanza Park, were from 2017, I believe. So they were older samples, and people wanted more drillings. They wanted more samples that could be analyzed. You know, I've heard from people in Prospector that the cap that was put there is slowly going away. And so I think that there's a need to do some more sampling there and see what's the current state. Something that was capped years ago may not still have that same level of protection. And so I do think that there's cause, there's justification to do a more community-wide sampling.
Thank you. Andy?
Yeah, I have to agree. I think community-wide sampling is a great thing. I think there's been more of it going on than probably the people know. The EPA has come to town a number of times while I've been in office and done samples in various areas. And those one of their last samplings led to the cleanup of Park City Mountain. Anybody that rides or hikes the Jennings Trail saw a couple of years ago there was a major cleanup there, as well as Treasure Mountain Middle School. Both of those were in response to samplings they do. If we're talking about doing a comprehensive neighborhood by neighborhood sampling to make sure that our caps are working, I'm very supportive of that. In terms of the sampling that was done at Bonanza Park, I think there was misinformation on that, and a lot of the people believe that there had been no sampling, that the city was doing this randomly, and there had been sampling, and there was a plan in place for dealing with that. Doesn't mean we needed to move forward, but the idea that those soils were particularly hazardous or toxic is not true. They were sampled, and they were standard mine soils.
Okay, thank you. Deed-restricted housing. It's being examined to help alleviate the scarcity of housing and the complete lack of affordability for median-income families. Do you have new or different ideas that may help alleviate the crisis? And what do you think the city should expect on this front in the medium-term future, say 2 to 4 years? Nan, you first, please.
I'm encouraged. We are looking at the Deed Light program that originated in Vail, where people are able to put more of a light deed restriction on their properties. And what I love about that is it requires that the property be occupied either by the owner or by a long-term renter. So we're not going to be entering back into the short-term rental, and that will help build community because we're going to have people in long-term rentals. You know, I just lost my train of thought. I think that I've been having a lot of conversations with people that have purchased affordable housing and been able to get into those homes, and now they're really concerned. Those were supposed to be an opportunity for them to step up, and they're finding that with the 3% cap on what they can gain through those homes doesn't allow them to make that step up. So I'm interested in the city re-looking at that and seeing, does it make sense to increase that cap given the current market conditions to allow people to move up easier, to then free those units for more affordable housing? You know, one suggestion to me was instead of a 3% cap, do we take 3% less than market or 5% less than market? So I think there's some options there that we need to be looking at. I think every option is on the table as we address this problem.
Yeah, I talked about earlier, I think our focus has shifted for sale units to rental housing, and that's going to probably address, those will be smaller units and may address more people. And so that's something that's encouraging, but one of the things I'm excited about is we are looking at doing some partnerships with either private entities or nonprofits where the city would act as a land bank and provide the land, and you would have a third party that comes in and builds the deed-restricted housing and accomplishes some of your needs. We do have a project right now we're negotiating for the Homestake lot, and if this formula turns out to be a winner, there are multiple pieces of land around the town that the city could work simultaneously on, and that could get us a lot of housing in a hurry, which I think is sorely needed. So fingers crossed that that formula works. A couple of things I think we need to do a better job of. We've long heard from our seniors that there's a need for step-down housing, and I know we've run into some problems. Once upon a time, we provided senior housing as part of our lotteries. We prioritized that, and then we were told that that goes against some federal laws, so we got out of that business. But what I've heard from the seniors is they don't necessarily need affordable housing. What they need is step-down housing, that it's smaller and it's ADA compatible. And I think as we're talking about mixing in some market-rate units into our affordable projects, we can kill a couple of birds with one stone by providing some for seniors. On a state level, a number of us resort towns are working with the legislature. We formed what's called the Resort Town Caucus. There's actually a few of us with Springdale, Hurricane, Alta, Bryan Head, Moab, and Park City. And we are talking to the state about mechanisms to get new tax structures or new state funding that because housing is so acute in our community. So I think there are a lot of opportunities out there, but I will say housing is probably the most difficult topic for us to deal with on council. It's something everybody agrees we need, but nobody really wants it in their neighborhood. Nobody agrees with the ways we do it. It's a controversial thing. And so ultimately, I think we need to expand our housing conversations, bring in more stakeholders, and make it more of a community conversation.
Thank you. I think this is probably going to be the last question we're able to get to. Our town reinvented itself once when it went from a mining town to a ski town. With climate change, it's very likely that our next reinvention will need to happen within our children or grandchildren's future. How would you reposition Park City and ensure viability for future generations? Andy, go ahead.
Yeah, I've been wondering with the summer, with the smoke and the heat and the fires, why we're talking about anything else in this campaign than climate change. It seems to me that it is by far the greatest long-term issue facing our community. And I'm proud of the work we've done. We're a leader not only among mountain towns, but across the U.S. in terms of our climate goals, our electrification, our work with the state to go utility scale on solar, and we get to cut the ribbon on that next week. So we're making great progress. But what I think's been put aside, and I'd like to focus on going forward, is talking about resilience as a community. We need to start looking at water as a precious resource it is. We need to have drought policies in place year-round and have code that firmly reflects that and prepares for persistent drought. We need to do a better job of preparing for wildfires. We've just started that, but we need increased fuel reduction. We need hardening of our residents, our residential neighborhoods, and continue to build the collaborations that will help us fight fires. And we need to prepare for the fact we are losing winter. Since the 70s, we have lost 6 weeks of freezing temperatures, and we've had four times the number of days that are 90 degrees plus. So our town is changing, and I think as the world gets more hot and crowded, we're still going to be a desirable place, but we're going to have to adjust. Our ski seasons are going to be slower, which maybe means we do more biking, more golf, other activities. We talked about arts and culture as a way to prepare ourselves, but I think we really need to start looking hard as a community what our opportunities are going forward and start working towards those, because climate change is not coming. It's here.
Thank you, Ann Nan.
I agree with that, and I think those conversations should have already started. I think that if we wait any longer, it's going to be even more difficult to figure out what's our next chapter for this city. Let's look at what our strengths are, and right now that's the hospitality industry. How do we shift the hospitality industry so that it's more year-round and we're not snow-focused, that there's opportunities for us to grow that sector? What aren't we doing here that we could be doing? What would be amazing? And then also, I'm looking at Jennifer here, sustainable tourism has to be a big part of that. We have to be able to protect our natural resources. We have to be able to protect our locals. And so I think that we've got to start those conversations now. What other opportunities are there for us here? COVID has certainly taught us that people can work from home, people can work remotely, and we have a new segment of our community that's doing just that. I've met so many people that have moved here and said, you know, I always thought it would be fun to live in Park City, and I figured out during COVID that I can do that because I can work remotely. So what are the opportunities with those remote jobs that can benefit this community? But we need to start that conversation yesterday.
Thank you both. That brings us just about the time for closing statements. You each have 2 minutes. Nan, you just answered a question. Do you want to take a break and have Andy do his closing statement first?
That's fine.
Okay. Okay.
Well, a number of years ago, I attended an event where Terry Tempest Williams was the keynote. And she had a statement that's always stuck with me. It is people plus place equals politics. And I have to say, I always kind of chafe when people call me a politician. And I hate to think of what we do here on a local level as political. I really prefer to think that it's community service. And I try to remind people that serving on our level in local government like this, we aren't pros. We're really just your neighbors taking our turn. So getting back to Terry's statement, Park City puts a great value on both people and place, and it leads to a lot of passion for both. During my tenure at the city, we've made some great progress on protecting place. We've pushed back on growth with over 3,000 acres of new open space, the density buy-down in Bonanza Park, and now we're working to even protect our urban parks. We've also continued to protect our historic character, including some real good progress on our historic mine structures. And we fought to protect the people. Under my term, we've added 157 new affordable housing units. Before COVID hit, we had nearly 3 million riders on our transit. And we've added new paths, tunnels, and trails to safely move people around town. And we've also done a lot of good equity work so our residents feel safe, welcome, and valued. So I'm grateful to have found this place many years ago. I started in the service industry and struggled to carve out a life here. I went on to build a business, worked hard, had good timing, and was fortunate enough to be able to stay. Park City's been good to me, and I've enjoyed giving back. I love where I live, both the people and the place, and I've fought for our community as mayor. Given another term, I'll continue to lead with optimism, enthusiasm, and heart.
Okay, thank you. Nan?
Well, I want to thank again the Park City Chamber, the Community Foundation, the Park Record, and KPCW for making this possible, and for all of you for taking the time today to learn more and to make an informed vote in the upcoming election. Park City has lofty goals in regard to transportation, housing, and energy. And to achieve these goals, we've got to work regionally and collaboratively, starting right here at home in the county we live in with our relationship with Summit County in the mayor's office. Collaboration is built on trust and respect, and I have the skill set and relationships to make that happen. In addition to that, Park City leadership needs to tap into the extensive human capital our residents bring them with them from their successful careers in a variety of fields. People are ready and willing to lend their expertise to help the city find solutions. So we need to put our egos aside as a city, admit the city doesn't have all the answers, and learn from our residents instead of hiring consultants from the outside. I have 2 master's degrees, and I'm the first one to tell you I don't have the expertise to negotiate multi-million dollar deals on behalf of the city, and I dare say the incumbent doesn't either. But we have residents that do have that expertise. In fact, we have residents that have trained the negotiators on the other side of deals the city's doing. So let's tap into that. Let's put our egos aside and make sure that the best people are at the table to get the best outcome for the city. No one person has all the answers, but collectively, we can move forward in a positive manner. If I'm fortunate enough to be elected Park City's next mayor, I will ensure that all voices feel welcome and heard as we engage together in an inclusive and transparent public process. I humbly ask for your vote on November 2nd.
Thank you very much. Thanks to both of you for your time and information. Reminder, we'll be back at 5:00 in this room with candidates for Park City Council.
Moderators Michelle Dininger and Bubba Brown from KPCW and Park Record. Great job, you guys. Thank you so much. Thank you.